Thanks as always for listening to The American Idea. Today's episode, in celebration of July 4th, is a special one. We're giving you access to the first session of our free online course, The American Idea. In this segment, Jeff discusses the meaning of America's first core document, the Declaration of Independence. Now, if you're interested in learning more, we've included an enrollment link in the notes for this episode. You can study at your own pace what three great Americans recognized as the American idea, starting with the Declaration of Independence. Thanks for listening, and happy Independence Day.
I want to welcome everybody to this class session in our course, The American Idea. We're going to be talking about the first document in our series, the Declaration of Independence, a remarkably important document for understanding who we are as Americans. And joined for that conversation by our friend, Professor Chris Burkett. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here.
The Declaration of Independence. Why are we starting the course with this document? What is so important about the Declaration?
A fantastic question, one certainly worth thinking about. So I would say the importance of the Declaration, first of all, is that it lays out the ideas, the principles that really tell us who we are as Americans, what makes us Americans, what unites us as one people. Forms what Thomas Jefferson, in a famous letter to Henry Lee, calls the American mind, and does so, as Jefferson says, in a way that is very plain and unmistakable and clear and common sense, so that not just Americans at the time that this was written would get it, but so that people in the future could become Americans or partake and participate in that American mind as well by seeing the ideas that are laid out here.
So, of course, the document is written in 1776. It's done by a committee of five, but Jefferson is the primary drafter of it, right? He submits it to Congress. They cut some stuff, including, as I remember, some stuff attacking the king for promoting and perpetuating the slave trade in America.
That's right.
The Congress cuts it. Jefferson regrets that, but it's done. We get it adopted on July 4th. What's interesting to me is not July 2nd. Let's help us understand that. John Adams thought Independence Day would be July 2nd.
That's right.
How come?
Yeah, as John Adams, as you know, famously said in a letter to his wife, Abigail, Americans would celebrate July 2nd for decades.
Yeah, why?
Well, because that is the day that Congress actually voted to approve independence. So technically, that is Independence Day.
I see.
That is the day that the United States became its own independent country. But July 4th is the day when Congress voted to approve the Declaration of Independence.
Ah.
So when we celebrate July 4th, what we're celebrating is the ideas. We're celebrating the ideas that are contained in the Declaration of Independence. And that happened pretty quickly, by the way. Within a decade, Americans were celebrating July 4th and not July 2nd.
So July 2nd made us a country. July 4th made us America.
That's a great way to put it.
The document itself, it has so many important lines in it. I'm just going to take a look. And if you have your American Idea books, your Declaration of Independence there with you, I want to just open to the very first lines of the Declaration of Independence. I'll just read it for us. It says, "When in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation." Whew, that's a long sentence.
It is.
And a lot of it's sort of 18th century English. But to me, a couple of phrases kind of stand out. One is one people. And we've talked a little bit about that already, right? What makes Americans one people? And you just said, it's these principles that are articulated here in the Declaration of Independence. It's not where we come from. It's not our last name. It's not our background. It's not our skin color. It's the principles that bind us together as Americans. But where did those principles come from? The Declaration seems to answer that question right here.
And it does with a very bold and, you might say, radical statement at the time. Those rights come from, those ideas, those principles come from the laws of nature and nature's God.
Okay, what's radical about that?
It's a view that almost nobody else in the world believed at the time. But Americans had come to believe that rights and liberties came from a source higher than other human beings. So the accepted view of these things for centuries, of course, and longer, had been that if subjects or citizens had any rights, they came from either the king or some aristocratic class or nobles or something like that, right? What the Declaration is saying right here in the very first sentence is we don't think rights come from other human hands. Rights come from some higher power, nature or God or nature's God, right? And because they come from something higher than other men, they can't and shouldn't be taken away by other men, right?
Okay.
So by taking the giving of those things out of the hands of human beings and placing them into the hands of God, those rights then become, you might say, unalienable.
Which is what the Declaration,
says in the next paragraph.
That's right. Okay, I got it. Then this the second paragraph, because we're really just going to work through the first and second paragraphs here. There's so much in the Declaration, but these are really important. The second paragraph begins, "We hold these truths to be self-evident." Okay. What's a self-evident truth?
It might seem a little self-contradictory for a truth to be self-evident, like something is immediately true. Some things might be immediately true.
Right. It's obvious when I walk outside, the sky is blue.
That's immediately true, but only if you know what blue is.
Well, okay.
Okay,
that's
so,
right.
But see, I think what Jefferson meant by self-evident is something like this. Something that is relatively easily known as true.
Okay.
It shows itself to be true, but it still requires a degree of education, even if just a little bit. So the sky is blue, self-evident, but only after you know that that's the sky and that blue is blue, right? So a self-evident truth we can know to be true, and it shouldn't take too much for us to see the truth of it, but it does take a little bit of help.
Okay, perhaps. So we need a little education.
A little bit.
We need a little education to know that these things are true, but they really are true. It doesn't, if people haven't been, haven't understood them or haven't been living by them, it doesn't mean they're not true.
That's right.
It just means they haven't understood them.
Once we see that the truth is true, once we see that the idea is true, it is always true to us. It can never again be untrue.
All right.
At least to us as individuals.
We've understood it. The first truth that's obvious to us once we've been enlightened to it is that all men are created equal. Ooh, that's a tough first one because to me that seems false.
It seems evidently untrue, doesn't it?
People are stronger. People are faster. People are wiser. People are better looking.
Yes, of course, exactly.
How are all human beings equal?
Yes, despite all of those differences, there's a fundamental way in which we are all equal, and that is in the fact that we have been endowed by our Creator, as the Declaration says, with certain unalienable rights. Okay, so as human beings, you and I are both human beings. If that is true, and I think it's self-evidently true, then you and I are both equal in the rights that we have been given by God or the laws of nature or nature's God. And despite all of those other differences, the fact that you are 10 times more intelligent than me, right? You're the
five times.
Okay, five. Fair enough. You're the Sir Isaac Newton of our day, let's say.
All right. Right.
But that does not give you the right to declare yourself unequal to me in the sense that you have the right to rule me and that I don't have the right to rule you without our consent.
So no matter how much smarter someone is, if it's another human being, they have the same right to govern themselves.
That's right.
Or as the Declaration goes on to say here in our text, that it's with, endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. Rights that can't be taken away. Government doesn't give you those rights. Government can't take those away. Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
So I have those rights not from you, not from any other human being, but from some higher power, some higher source, God, God of nature. Mm-hmm. And you do not have the right to take those things away from me. If you did, you would be unequal to me. But because we're equal, I can't take those rights away from you, and you can't take them away from me.
Then, in this world where human beings are equal in their possession of these natural rights, these rights from the laws of nature and nature's God, it goes on to say the Declaration that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Again, to me, that seems like a kind of radical new idea or radical truth, because you would have said to people, what's the purpose of government? And back in 1776, and a lot of people around the world would have said, well, to give glory to the monarch, to enrich the ruling class, to to conquer our neighbors. The Declaration says, no, that's not it.
That's
purpose of government is what?
Well, it's a great thing that we acknowledge that you have unalienable rights and that we equally have unalienable rights. But the truth of the matter is, I can say that all I want, but that may not stop you from trying to violate those rights. That's why we have government, okay, according to the Declaration.
To secure those rights.
Those rights I have by nature, but it turns out they also need to be protected,
right,
from people like you.
Right.
Or others, right?
Right. So we need law enforcement, for example, to protect our rights of life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, our property, those sorts of things.
And even before, I mean, law enforcement is important, but you also need laws.
You need laws.
Right? So law enforcement operates on laws. You have to...
Right?
So laws that are passed ought to be aimed at securing those unalienable rights that we have from God or from the Creator. Right?
But then the Declaration goes on to say something. Because you might say, well, where does government get the authority to do that? And the Declaration says, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Why does government need our consent?
Government is made up of human beings. The older idea was, of course, you've heard of the divine right of kings.
Sure.
It's a little abstract, but the old idea was that the king is God's appointed ruler on earth, and he just knows what's best, and he'll just take care of you. It turns out that kings are just human beings like the rest of us, which means they're, as James Madison would later say, not necessarily angels. What we have to do is find a way to create a government that is made up of other human beings and get that government to do its job of securing our rights, but at the same time, prevent it from violating those rights.
So government has to have our consent because we're all equal.
Exactly.
And because you and I are equals, I can't tell you what to do. You have to agree with what I'm telling you, or you have to agree to make me your ruler, and then I can tell you what to do.
Right. So the idea that we must give our consent, it arises from the fact that we're created equal.
Uh-huh.
And that nobody is born with a right to rule us without our consent. But it's also there to help us ensure that those who do govern do so in the way that is best aimed at securing our equal, unalienable rights.
Okay, so this is a really profound statement of principles that should be guiding us as Americans, as we understand ourselves as citizens of this country, that should be understood and taught to our children, our grandchildren, that really should be guiding American life. And I know that the Declaration becomes important as we go on in American history to people like Abraham Lincoln.
Oh, certainly.
Why did Lincoln think these principles that we were just discussing now were so important for his day?
That's a fantastic question. And I think Lincoln, of all people, saw very clearly that over a period of years, a good portion of Americans, for various reasons, lost sight of these ideas. They lost sight of the importance of the Declaration and the ideas contained in it. Not everybody, but it actually came to the point that some Americans rejected these ideas.
Mm.
And that affected and produced deep divisions among Americans over how to think about the role of government. It even led to deep constitutional divisions among Americans.
Uh-huh. And for example, is the Constitution pro-slavery or anti-slavery?
Exactly. Right. And I think Abraham Lincoln would say, well, if you read the Declaration of Independence as the sort of touchstone or the Rosetta Stone by which you think about the Constitution, that clearly slavery is unjust, Lincoln believed, right? And that the Constitution is not pro-slavery. Though it tolerates slavery to a certain degree, it is not a pro-slavery constitution.
So that's very important, right? Because some of our people taking this course might be thinking, look, they have these three great documents of American history. They don't have the Constitution in this class. We revere the Constitution. We respect the Constitution and love it at Ashbrook, of course. But what you're saying is, if we're going to think about the Constitution even, the Declaration is still important because it's really the lens through which we should interpret the meaning of the Constitution.
Or to use an analogy that Abraham Lincoln himself used, the Declaration of Independence is like an apple of gold.
Uh-huh, sure.
And which is a great Old Testament reference. And the Constitution is a frame of silver. And the purpose of the frame, which frames the gold, the apple of gold, the purpose of the frame is not to blur or conceal the apple, but to adorn and protect it. So the purpose of the Constitution is to allow the principles of the Declaration to to persevere, to shine through, to perpetuate them, to preserve them, especially in the minds of Americans, so that we can actually be a constitutional people and at the same time live up to the principles that are laid out in the Declaration.
So the Declaration of Independence is this foundational document because it's supposed to guide our law, it's supposed to guide our politics, it's supposed to guide our society, and it's even supposed to guide our hearts and minds as Americans.
I think so. That's a great way to put it.
Incredibly important. Yeah, that means that we're going to continue as we go through the American Idea course, thinking about the meaning of the principles of the Declaration of Independence.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The American Idea. If you enjoyed this episode, remember to subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and leave a 5-star review. If you want to learn more or get involved in Ashbrook's vital work, visit our website, ashbrook.org.